Hi, I'm Mike Sklenz, and this is episode 40 of Nintendo World Report's Connectivity. On this episode, we're kicking off a three-week series on the Pikmin franchise with a discussion of the original Pikmin for the GameCube. After that, Neil, with some help from Patrick, interviews owner and director of Renegade Kid, Jules Watson. They talk about basically every game Renegade Kid has released. After the show proper ends, you can stay a while and listen to Scott, James Dawson, and Nate talk about Diablo 3. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to Connectivity Pikmin World Report. We are doing a three-week focus on the Pikmin franchise. We're going to start off this week with Pikmin 1, which of course is
the
many
best
people's,
Pikmin game.
Yeah, it's many people's favorite Pikmin game, but I'm here with one other person who I know for a fact doesn't think that way.
Yes.
Mr. JP Corbin, how you doing?
Hey, everybody. Yes, Pikmin 2 for life.
And then, of course, we've got Zach here as well. And Zach, we brought you on because you just finished an Extra Life article, which is still in editing, I believe, for
the
first...
I don't think it's getting put up till July.
Yes.
That sounds
we
about
did.
Right.
We changed the Pikmin. For all our listeners, this is like inside Nintendo World Report. Pikmin 2 month was supposed to be June, and then it never got done, so we pushed it back to July because of E3. That's the story, at least.
Stupid
that's
E3.
That's the story. We're sticking to it. I love this series, and I have a lot of really fun memories of playing the first two Pikmin games. Really, this first one almost more than the second one. The first Pikmin game kind of came at one of those like kind of transitional moments in my life anyway. So it sticks out more when I think about the series. I played the first Pikmin game while I was working the night shift at a empty dorm that I was working the Christmas break on, where like one person stayed, so they had to have someone to staff the front desk. So they had me working like a 4 a.m. to 9 a.m. shift. So I had just gotten my GameCube, so I would bring my GameCube down.
Andy.
Yes.
Were there some sweet sounds coming down on the night shift?
No. Oh. No, there were no sounds. It was dead quiet. except for the sound of the Pikmin music, which still to this day reminds me of playing video games at 3:30 in the morning. I guess, it was like 3 to 10 or some crazy. I spent most of my time playing like in just this big ass empty like a lobby way, and it was just it's the kind of game that suits itself so well to playing with solitude that I couldn't have really have had a better experience with any video game at that point in time. It was something else,
just like Resident Evil.
That's exactly the truth, yeah, because I played Resident Evil kind of the same way, only I was in my dorm room. Pikmin. It was the same. It was very close to the same period of time, though, and I sequestered myself for a weekend. I played the entire thing in a weekend with I pretty much sat on the couch for 3 days straight,
nice.
Which is how you have to play a survival horror game. You can't take too many breaks. I think I went downstairs to eat, and that was about it.
But anyway, Pikmin.
Pikmin.
Well, anyway, like Pikmin was one of the games I got with my GameCube, which I got for Christmas in 2001, so the year it came out, a little bit after launch. And so Pikmin was one of the three games I got, along with Luigi's Mansion and Rogue Leader, so that's a pretty good lineup there.
Yeah, it is.
And I loved it. I was a big fan. It was like really unlike anything I'd ever played before, and you really haven't seen much like it since.
No.
I mean, there have been a few things like those Overlord games, and there was the recent Vita launch title that was supposed to be like it, but really, you don't see many games taking this style, and I think none of them have done it anywhere near as well as the Pikmin games have.
Yeah.
They have a really good personality. Like,
they
I
do.
Think the writing of the game does more for it almost than anything else.
It really
else.
Does. I went back and I played through the entirety of the new Play Control version within the last few weeks since E3. I played the Pikmin 3 demo and I was hooked on it, so I went back and played the first one, and I'm in the process of playing through the second one. And it really stands out how good the writing is. I mean, like, this was, I think, the period in which Nintendo's Treehouse localization team was really coming into its own.
Yeah.
And I would probably call them the best localization team in the business, or at least up there. And this was a great example of that. It's well, I mean, the second one had more humor in it, I would say, because it, with the product placement. But I mean, that's, I guess, a story for next week. But the first game has great, like a great charm to it. You know, it's a simple story, but it's told really well.
Yeah, it is a simple story.
Hey, look who's joined us on the call, Mr. Carmine Red. Welcome to the show, Carmine.
Sorry, I'm on Nintendo time.
You were going to be here on time, but then you had to have a big announcement saying you're going to be 5 minutes late. It happens.
Every single conference.
There was actually an announcement preceding the announcement. But anyway. Yes. Carmen, why don't you talk about your initial thoughts on Pikmin and how you started with the series?
Well, I got the GameCube at launch, and Pikmin's weird. I always think it's a launch game, but it actually came out later. December, January, something like that?
It was December. It was like 2 weeks after launch. And I think it and Smash Brothers Melee came out the same day, 2 weeks after launch.
I think they came out within a couple of days of each other, but I don't think it was the same day.
Yeah, well,
I have very vivid memories of that, like, two-week period of time.
Yeah. I guess that's a launch window then. But yes, I don't know. I mean, that first Pikmin, it's I still think about it. I dug out New Play Control just last night and revisited it, and it's perfect. I don't know. I'm in love.
It is great. I don't know, perfect, but it's very good.
There's this whole Pikmin 1 versus Pikmin 2 thing going on, and I'm definitely on Pikmin 1's side.
Yes, but I think we're all together in that we love both of them. We just have different, you know, favorites, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I think Zach maybe not. Zach's very opinionated, so maybe he just hates Pikmin 2.
Zach hasn't actually played Pikmin 2 himself.
Well, you could do that. It's out now on the Wii. It's $20. Definitely worth that.
Zach, you should probably do that.
You should. You should, because it'll make you appreciate Pikmin 1.
Hey, I like that.
Hang up the call and go out and buy it right now.
Just hop on the eShop and buy it digitally. Come on.
Oh, right? Yeah.
That would be great, wouldn't it?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was 2 months from now already.
Maybe when I get the Wii U.
Yeah. Zach, your first experience with the game was on the Wii, not the GameCube, right?
Yeah. I'd never actually played the GameCube game. I'd seen it. I think there was a demo in a store that I might have played, and I didn't really get it. Because I'm bad at RTSs anyway, and that's what I thought it was, and it kind of is. But
it's a very interesting. I mean, it's a very different take on the genre.
Different take, sure. So I got the New Play Control version for review on Wii, and you know, I liked it a lot. I was very, it very much surprised me, and I have warmed to it even more since then. I've grown to like the time limit, whereas before I don't know if I did.
See, I had the same experience going back and playing the game in the last couple weeks. I remember back on the GameCube when I initially played it, the time limit was like stressful and all that, but maybe it's just because I'm older and more experienced and it doesn't bother me as much, but I think it adds something to the game. It adds a sense of urgency. It makes you more careful with your planning. You really have to think things out ahead of time.
Yeah,
to make sure you're making an efficient use of the time you have.
This is probably spoiler territory because it's in my extra life, but I'm going to say it here anyway. It gives me... Well, first off, I should say that in the Wii game, you can select any day you want that you've completed.
That's great. I mean,
that's
I think
great.
That's...
And what it means is that you have this mighty Switch Force-esque way to revisit stages you completed and beat your own time, basically.
Yes.
And get a better time.
So you can revisit any day. Does that mean you can kind of like...
Once you go back, it erases your progress forward.
You can erase your progress back to any point in the game?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's kind of like the Prince of Persia mechanic, sort of.
Yeah.
Okay, that's kind of cool. I haven't played much of the new Play Control version for Pikmin 1.
Oh, it's quite good.
I don't think you couldn't do that on Pikmin 1 for GameCube.
No,
could
you couldn't.
No.
It, this was an addition for the New Play Control, and I think it's handy. It removes some of the stress for the limit. So it's like if you really screw up a couple days, you can go back and redo them, and so like you don't have to worry as much.
I never had a problem with the time limit because I beat the game with all of the parts on day 30 the first time that I played it. Like, I really had no problem with the time limit. And I've replayed the game several times since then, never had any problems with that on any other subsequent playthroughs. So I guess I never really saw the time limit as being that detrimental because I was never all that stressed out by it.
I didn't have a problem with it in my recent playthrough, but it's nice that it's there. You know, I didn't really use it, but it's nice that it's there.
What, the time limit? The end of the day thing or the 30 days thing?
The being able to go back. With the new play control, being able to go back to previous days.
Well, I think by the time limit, we mean the 30-day limitation, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, what I liked is that, you know, if I would go through a level, I would get used to it, and then I'd just replay it and do better.
Okay.
You know, right from the get-go.
Fair enough.
And I really like that about it. Like there's a underground level where there's a lake, and you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
a shallow lake.
There's the lake, and then there's the part with the fire and stuff. Yeah,
And the fire.
There's like how many bosses in that stage? There's a few of them.
There's like two or three, but I remember having a hell of a time on that. But then once I got used to how that stage flows, I was able to go back and really kick its ass. And you're kind of the whole game to me now is finding the most efficient way through every stage.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to go back and try and beat your, like, I went through and I got all 30 pieces in 29 days, and if I were going to go back, if I didn't have the second one to go to, I might have started it up again and tried to do it faster. And so that's like a interesting kind of high score kind of thing. How quickly can you do it?
I mean, there are modes like this in the other games. I mean, there's challenge mode in Pikmin 2, and then Pikmin 3 will have that whole replay thing. You know, you beat a level, you replay it, you go back, and then you actually get to study from a bird's eye view your thing. So, I mean, I guess we're going to see actually a lot more of that. And I think it's a great thing to do in Pikmin. I didn't know that Pikmin New Play Control actually lets you do that. I don't know if... I don't know. I just picked it up, and in a couple of days, I'm like, 14 parts in, but do you think like this time limit is something that is there anyone in this chat who doesn't like the 30-day time limit? Is that just a hardcore gamer thing? Because I initially
didn't like it.
Yes,
but
like I
said,
back originally on the GameCube, I wasn't a huge fan of the time limit, but playing it recently, I like it, and I think it adds to the game.
And I think someone, who was it who said, like, it just gives more impetus and more emotion.
That's what I'm saying. Like, urgency is a great word. It's like you can't really waste a day. I mean, you can if you want to use the functionality and go back and replay it. But if you're not going to do that, you need to be efficient. You need to get as much as you can done in one day. And
it's like a full commitment. And whatever you don't get in that day, sometimes you're fighting for seconds just to break down the wall. So that you can just go to the ship and leave that part of the puzzle for later, which is great. Because Pikmin 1, you had like these... The levels were, compared to I think, Pikmin 2. Pikmin 1, the levels were really meant to be taken over several days, you know?
Yes.
You had this time element of, I'll schedule this, I'll do this today because I'm preparing for later.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I felt like there were several parts in the game towards the end, like most of the last stage before the final boss, and also that underground lake stage, there's a specific part on that where you have to like navigate a fire tunnel to get a part and then bring it back, and there's a lake you have to get across as well. Yeah. There's several parts in that game towards the end that feel like the culmination of everything you've been working for thus far.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you wish there was more of that.
See, what it made me wish, now, like, I've gone back and played it recently, and going back after playing Pikmin 2 a lot, those kinds of things, that last stage, the one with the lake and the fire and all that, specifically, made me really wish you had the mechanic from Pikmin 2 where you could split between Olimar and Louie, where you could like divvy up tasks, because that last stage is like there are different things going on all around the level and you want to multitask, but it's really hard the way it's set up.
That last stage is pretty crazy. I seem to recall getting my ass kicked by it quite a few times before I even got to the last boss, who in and of himself is pretty ass kicking.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pikmin's definitely one of those games where, like, you, or at least on the GameCube, I'd play a level, I'd get to the end of the day, and I'm like, I'm not happy with my performance.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm doing this again, and until I get it right, you know. And
what do you guys think of the environments in the game? That's one of my favorite parts of the game.
Oh, they're gorgeous.
Is the lush, like, foresty kind of environments. That's my favorite kind of environment in any kind of video game, and Pikmin really nails it.
I think my favorite level is the one with the big the bird head, because it's so expansive and foresty, and there's water and rocks and plants and
they're all great. I mean, like, there's part of that game is like, it's, you know, a problem with the second one is, I mean, is the underground stages, which it's not really because they're randomly generated. I never had that issue, but
they're just less
bland. I mean, you know, there's nothing going on, and there's no scenery. Mm-hmm. Which I think takes away from the game, but in this
The sense of exploration is completely lost in those stages.
Those are like you're getting from here to here. It's not like it's
the sense of maybe not the sense of exploration, but the sense of wonder,
the sense of discovery.
Right. I mean, you don't have discovery. That's you don't have an environment. You don't have anything around you. There's no environment. It's just kind of here you are, and you got to get through this like maze-like area. In this game, everything's crafted so well.
And see, I think for as much as people like to, and I'm going to go ahead and skip ahead, it's a little bit ahead to Pikmin 2 now. We'll cover this more next week. But, you know, Pikmin 2, a lot of the people slight the underground stages, and I can't disagree with that. But the overworld stages are just as good, if not better, than they were in Pikmin 1, and I love that about the game.
Well, except for the last stage of Pikmin 1, I don't think there's anything like that in Pikmin 2, that last multi-day campaign.
You're right, there's not. The last stage in Pikmin 1 is probably the best game between the best stage between both games in terms of just pure strategy.
Yeah, there's so much. I mean, like, I love that in that last stage, you need all three types of Pikmin and you need to use them perfectly. There are pieces that require you to use all three types to get that ship piece. And there's a strategy and you really need to employ it, and it's like there's so much depth there that you really don't see at the beginning that you need to manage them and you need to pick the right ones. And I just love the game. It does a great job of it.
Yeah, I mean, I know people call Pikmin action and they call it like strategy or some mix between the two, but I really think it feels like a puzzle. Yeah.
It's that too. It really is.
It's a giant level puzzle, which is wonderful because this is Nintendo and they know how to make these things. They know how to make that last stage in Pikmin 1, which makes you use everything up until that game.
I mean, it's strategy, but it's not you against an enemy as much as it's you against the environment. Mm-hmm. And you need to manipulate that environment to get everything you need out of it. And so it's a strategy, and there's like a puzzle element there. It's like, how do you do this? And there's, you know, with the time management, it's like, there's a lot to it.
What do you guys think about the addition of the Wii controls? Do you think there's any drawbacks to the additional controls, or is it all pretty much beneficial?
I couldn't go back to the old way.
You see, I'm not so sure I agree. I find that the C-stick, where you could just move your Pikmin around you to give them marching orders. I used that all the time in the first Pikmin. And having to just sort of point around your guy with the, I think it's the D-pad, isn't it?
Down on the D-pad, yeah.
Down on the D-pad. I don't like that nearly as much on the Wii version as I did on the GameCube conversion.
Well, and this is jumping a couple weeks ahead, but in Pikmin 3 that I played at the demo, the guy running the demo told me that mechanic is just not in Pikmin 3.
Really?
It's all throwing. There is no...
Oh, I don't like that at all.
Well, they have a charge. They have a charge in Pikmin 3, like an all-in.
But it was the easiest and quickest way to get your Pikmin to just pick up and carry the things that were around you.
Yeah, like if you had like five of those pellets, you just...
Or if you wanted to have them attack a wall, you just walked up and used a C-stick to just throw them all at the wall.
Yeah.
I think there's a charge mechanic in Pikmin 3, but I guess we'll wait to talk about that.
You know, I shouldn't judge it because it's possible they just improved the AI enough that I don't need to do that
anymore. I think they did. But... going back to Pikmin 1, it was I will say that the controls in New Play Control Pikmin 1 don't feel as good as the controls in the Pikmin 3 demo at E3. They've really upped those, and the game feels a lot tighter than the New Play Control version does in that regard.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that with the Wii remote, you're able to actually you're not able to throw Pikmin further. I'm fairly certain that limitation's set, but you're able to call Pikmin to you from further away.
Yeah, which is a huge help.
I mean, that really makes it like I felt like I could move around quicker that way.
Yeah.
And, well, I have one thing to say about the new controls. I mean, I was lying back on my couch, and unknowing to me, my pointer was off on one part of the screen, and I was pressing A, and I threw a Pikmin right off one of those underground levels into the abyss, so I'm not... So it's not because it's because you point. I guess it's just not
be
as immediate
careful.
As the GameCube.
Be careful with that pointer.
So maybe not perfect, but on the whole, I can't go back.
Yeah, it just I wouldn't. It's like this is another example of the Wii controls, like just dramatically improving a game that wasn't designed for them. With really, it's the pointer, which is I think right.
And I'm surprised I'm saying this because when I first got like. Pikmin on the GC, it felt like it was made for that controller. It felt like when Miyamoto was telling them, no, the control has to be like this, he was doing that with Pikmin in mind. I mean, that's just, you know, my impression. I've magically got this idea of, oh, this is what he was talking about.
I very much agree. I love the GameCube control for Pikmin. I think it's designed perfectly for that controller. And that's one of the reasons that, although I don't have a lot of specific complaints about the Wii control, I don't think it feels as natural to me as the GameCube control does, and that's just because it was designed specifically for that controller.
Yes, and that's, I think, why Pikmin 3 feels better, because it was designed for that interface.
Yeah, definitely. Well, any final thoughts on Pikmin 1?
Everyone should play it.
Really, yeah, you should. This is, I mean, people, you know, talk shit about Nintendo for not making new franchises. This is probably the most recent big franchise they've made. And if you haven't played it, you really owe it to yourself to go back and play this. Get the new Play Control version. It's probably pretty cheap by now.
Hey, if you tell someone on the forums that Nintendo doesn't create new franchises, they'll list you 50 completely irrelevant games. They're not in Rainbow.
They're not.
Come on, guys.
No, it's okay. There's like maybe 8 or 10 relevant games, and then 60 more that aren't relevant is really what the forums... There are good elements to it, but the forums go a little overboard. I love your forums, but you really sometimes...
It's the internet,
forums are great,
dude.
Guys.
Hey,
I
one
will
more
say,
thing.
Our forums are much better. Our forums are much better than any other part of
the
internet.
If you want new IP, you go play Starfy, I guess. There you go.
Hey, one more thing I want to say real quick about Pikmin 1. It is really gorgeous.
It is.
And I think this is something I also said in my soon-to-be-posted Extra Life. The fact that Pikmin 3 just looks like Pikmin 1 in HD is a huge compliment to the first game.
It basically does. It looks like a higher-resolution Pikmin 1.
Yeah.
Works for me.
I don't have a complaint. That's perfect, because the Pikmin 1 looks great as it is. So it's like it's maybe a few more polygons and just higher resolution, and it's gorgeous.
I'm not sure if it's Pikmin 1 or 2, so this may be a premature comment, but is Pikmin 1 the game that has the empty swimming pools? Or are those in the underground stages of Pikmin 2?
I think
those are
Pikmin 2.
Those are the underground stages.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Huh. Anyway.
There you go.
Well, Pikmin 1, folks. First in our 3-week Pikmin extravaganza. If you don't like Pikmin, then maybe go subscribe to Car Talk for a few weeks and come back.
Get off our phone. No, don't come to Nintendo World Report. If you don't like Pikmin, go find another site.
Yeah,
but I do recommend Car Talk.
I do too, and they're going off the air now.
Yeah, they are. October.
Sad.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll
hey, everybody.
Again.
We'll see you next week for Pikmin 2. All right.
Yep.
Pikmin 2.
Bye. Bye.
here for a special segment on connectivity of the Kinectabytes variety. And it's me and Patrick as usual. And this time we have a special guest, Renegade Kids, Jules Watchtham.
Hello.
And
how's it going?
Yes. And I guess I'll let you talk, Jules, because Bomb Monkey should be coming out roughly a day after this goes up. So
that's right.
Yeah. So what would you say was kind of like the inspiration or genesis of Bomb Monkey? How long have you been working on it?
You know, it's actually an idea that I've been kicking around for quite a while, just as far as the basic concept. But, you know, in a nutshell, it's kind of my weird interpretation of Tetris, really, as far as kind of, you know, having pieces that you are given and how you use those pieces obviously ultimately, you know, help you fend off the rising blocks, but in the end obviously cause your demise and game over as well. And I really liked that simplistic kind of poetry, the Tetris, you know, how it works. Ah, it's really clever. Not many puzzle games work that way as well as that does anyway. So anyway, yeah, that was the inspiration. It was basically Tetris in a nutshell.
And I know I remember talking to you about this a little bit at E3, but I know from especially playing it more now that I've been playing the final game, it reminds me a lot of two games, one of which I know for a fact you did not know existed, which is called Panic Bomber, which I think came out on like Super Famicom in Japan and came out on Virtual Boy in North America. I actually got Panic Bomber like a week before E3, so it was fresh in my mind.
Oh, that's cool, yeah.
But the other game was Wario's Woods, which, I mean, there's a little bit of difference, but it just, especially with the bomb comparison, it seems kind of similar in that way. Was that on your mind at all, or have you even played that game before?
No, I haven't played that one either.
it's a pretty damn good puzzle game, if I do so say myself. I think
I need to check it out.
The NES version is on Virtual Console, and I think it was one of the last NES games to come out.
On Wii Virtual Console?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I'll have to check it out.
It also features a purple Wario for some reason.
Well, that's always good. Yeah. You can't go wrong with a purple Wario. Yeah. You know, it's actually I'm losing my train of thought. The way Bomb Monkey kind of evolved over time is interesting. It started off, like I said, just the core idea as far as the game design. And then, actually, one of the first iterations was called Warehouse Willy. And you were a little blue collar little guy working in a warehouse, obviously, and your name was Willy. And
makes sense.
Everything was crates, and the main character was at the bottom of the screen. There's a conveyor belt coming towards him, and that's where all the pieces were. And you would throw things up onto the conveyor belt and destroy them. That was the exact same gameplay, but a completely different theme. And that's kind of how it started. And I was like, well, and then just that theme, even though it's cute, and I like that kind of stuff, you know, back from the Spectrum days of Jet Set Willy and Manic Miner and things like that, you know, I'm very fond of those types of things. That's purely nostalgic, though. There's no other good reason to like that stuff, really, because the theme is very odd and strange. But I guess not unlike Mario, I guess, when you think about it. But,
yeah, true.
But I kind of thought, well, let's go for something a bit more kind of, you know, generally appealing. Who doesn't like monkeys? Doesn't like bombs.
I mean, it's really a good combination. I do like reading the instruction manual. It has a lot of kind of like, all right, young bomb monkey, now get ready to blow up some blocks. It's got that very much like that retro vibe to just the presentation of the game and everything about that.
The manual actually worked out well. Actually, Matthew Gambrell, the programmer, he actually wrote the manual. One day he was kind of putting it together, and he has a very good sense of humor. He's very dry. And he's really into old classic, you know, games. Huge fan of them. So he was putting it together, and he just did the whole thing himself. And I'm like, man, that's amazing. It was just great. You know, his whole concept of, you know, it being a sport and all that kind of stuff, that's totally him. He just totally just made it up. And that was done about a few weeks before we actually submitted the game to Nintendo. So it wasn't, that had nothing, you know, the foundation of the game was not built on that at all in any way. But he kind of conjured that. And it's really neat. I like that in manuals when it has its own personality. And when you read it, you're like, oh, that's really cool. And when I was reading it, I'm like, oh man, this game sounds awesome. He did a good job. But I think it complements the game really well. It captures the spirit, you know, of these cheeky monkeys in a jungle kind of playing this ridiculous sport. It's fun.
Now, Patrick, you have not said much. As someone who has not played the game, I don't know if you've even seen much about it.
No.
Do you have anything that you're curious about in regards to the game?
I you guys have been describing the gameplay, and it seems completely different to me because I actually haven't seen any videos of it yet. Neil hasn't told me much about it. I'm interested in getting it this Thursday when it comes out on the eShop.
Well, let me explain the gameplay for you if you would like to hear.
I would.
Would you like to hear that? All right, let me start from the top. the basic controls are, you start at the top of the screen and you can move left and right. And when you move, it kind of moves on a grid basis. So you move like an entire kind of grid snap to the left and to the right. And then you push down to drop the pieces. And you'll mainly get blocks, kind of blocks in your hands. But occasionally you'll get a bomb and then a few other kind of special pieces that you can use as well. And it's interesting where I watch a lot of people when they play it and they'll kind of put down, you know, three same colored blocks next to each other and they expect them to disappear. They're like, oh, well, why did nothing happen?
That was actually, fortunately, when I first saw the game, I saw someone else do that, but that was in my head what I think would happen too.
Yeah, which is really, it totally makes sense. But to me, I wasn't thinking that because I knew how it works. So I was like, oh, wow. When people started doing that, I was like, oh, that's really fascinating, you know? It's so interesting how other games can condition your expectations of a game, a brand new game. It's really, really fascinating. Anyway, so you put down the colored blocks, and you do want them to be touching each other, but the way you actually ignite them and destroy them is by dropping a bomb. So when you finally get a bomb, you throw that down, and it kind of has a cross explosion kind of radius, so like a plus sign. One unit to the left, right, above, and below will be destroyed by this bomb when it explodes. So anything in that area will get hit, and then if there's like a row of same colored blocks, it will create a chain, so like they'll kind of explode one after the other and take each other out. And in addition to that, then any pieces that may have been kind of a, like, say if you had a line that kind of goes beneath some other pieces that weren't destroyed, once the explosion is over, they'll kind of like shake in the air, then drop, or gravity will kick in and then make everything kind of drop to the ground again. In addition to that, you'll have these striker blocks, and when you hit those with a bomb, they can take out an entire row or an entire column in one go. And that's really cool. So you can actually, if you notice there's like a horizontal striker block deep in the pack below you, you're like, oh, cool, and then you get like a vertical striker block. You can position that above that, way above the stack, but you know it's going to, you know, reach that. You can put it up above the stack, ignite that one, you get a bomb, and it creates a great combo where you'll get a vertical blast, then a horizontal blast, and you can have another vertical blast, and you can create this crazy combo. So in addition to it taking out those, it's also hitting the colored blocks, so you're actually getting these chains as well happening. So it can be really cool, these really explosive, crazy moments of, wow, my screen's nearly full up, I'm nearly dead, and boom, all this stuff goes off, and now you've wiped it out, and you're kind of down to nearly nothing. It's quite fun when that happens.
It sounds like there's quite a bit of strategy involved sometimes.
Definitely. I mean, you can just have mindless fun, and I think, you know, because it starts off at a really easy kind of pace, pretty slow, which is nice, but then kind of ramps up when you get a higher level, because the level, the more blocks you destroy, the faster it moves, you know, okay. Very similar to Tetris in that regard. So you kind of move up these different levels, which basically means speed. And then in addition to that, there were the bomb letters, so B-O-M-B. And when you destroy, and they, you know, arrive one letter at a time. When you destroy, you know, all of the bomb letters, then you'll have what's called bomb monkey time. And that's when you have an unlimited supply of bombs for 10 seconds. So you get to rain bombs down on the playfield to kind of destroy everything. So, yeah, so that's kind of it in a, well, not really a nutshell, but in a wordy kind of explanation.
Yeah, and the one thing that, at least from, you know, playing it now, there's a two-player mode, and because the whole game is played in, I guess, book style would be the official term? I don't even know.
Yeah, I apparently, yes.
But holding the 3DS in that style, that's how you play the game, and it's, you know, all the gameplay's on the touchscreen, but you can also play multiplayer where you have one person on the touchscreen using the D-pad, and another person using the top screen, using the face buttons, and that gets right. Really, really ridiculous because it basically makes that kind of competitive Tetris concept, but all focused in such a small area. And I think actually the proximity of that, I don't think that two player would be the same if it was like local multiplayer and each person had their own system.
Totally. Yeah, you're forced to kind of get uncomfortably close to each other, which is quite nice. Actually, one time I was playing at E3 against Tyrone, from Nicholas, and this is actually the first time where we didn't actually have a surface to put it down. We're in a bar, as you are, in E3. So we were both holding it, and that was really fascinating because we were both working together in that sense, both holding the machine and supporting it from falling to the floor, but obviously against each other at the same time. And that was really fascinating. And then in addition to that, you know, you can get quite, you know, animated, you know, towards the end. So your hands, you are moving faster and you're kind of, you know, jerking the machine around unintentionally to get stuff going. And that was cool because you could actually feel your opponent's moves, literally. It was, like, really interesting. And he actually beat me. He did beat me. I'll admit it. But it's a lot of fun. Multiplayer is very special on this game, for sure. I mean, I think the single-player modes are pretty cool. There's a lot of fun there. But, yeah, the multiplayer is definitely where it shines. It's a lot of fun. And you can play cooperatively, where you both play together against, you know, with one score, or you can play versus against each other, obviously, to take each other out. So, actually, and in co-op mode, you'll have this special little gift box, little present, if you destroy that, that kind of gives your, I guess, your partner, that means the next item that they'll get will be a bomb. So if you have someone less experienced on one side, you can kind of help them out on the other side by going, okay, yes, I'll bomb that little gift box to make sure they get a bomb because obviously they need one because they're struggling or whatever. So it's pretty neat. There's some unique stuff in there.
Yeah. The one thing I guess I have to ask the critical question that I think I already know part of the answer to, but one disappointing thing that I'm noticing is that there's really no kind of leaderboard in the game. I know online leaderboards can be a pain, but there's also it only shows your top overall score, not any kind of like top five or anything. Is there any reason why you chose to go that route?
No, I mean, just because we wanted to make it, you know, simple and get it out, you know, sooner rather than later. I mean, the networking stuff can add a month or three of time when you consider everything involved in creating the system, making sure it works, and then making sure Nintendo approves it, because you can have lots of little issues. So it can add a lot of time. And this game obviously was very kind of short and quick, relatively speaking, as far as we actually started developing it anyway.
When did development start for Bomb Monkey?
It was this year. I don't know. It was basically a few months ago. Pretty much. It was just a few months of development, and that wasn't even full time. And honestly, we probably spent too much time on it anyway. I mean, when you look at the credits, you'll see that we put way too much work even into the credits. So.
I love the credits in Mutant Muds and Bomb Monkey. They both have a lot of personality.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. But yeah, no, it's with this, we're trying to be smart because now we're, you know, publishing our own games on the eShop, so we want to be. You know, we don't want to spend way too much time and money on making a game because we want to kind of try and make a profit so we can continue to make games. So we're trying to kind of, you know, strike that balance between making games but just not spending too much time on them beyond what we have to. And I think we've achieved that with both Mutant Muds and Bomb Monkey. I think we got it to the point where, like, yes, we're happy with this. This is good. Yes, we could spend another, you know, 1 to 3 months adding this, that, and the other, but do we need to? And is that... You know, is that going to actually, you know, help in the long run, or will it hinder? You know, because if you imagine Mutant Muds coming out, you know, 1 or 3 months later than it did, that, you know, could have been very bad. Because I think it came out in January, which was kind of perfect.
Yeah, I would say January time frame for the eShop was an embarrassment of riches. So it kind of worked out. It was high marks for everything that was released in that time.
Yeah, as a gamer, that was an amazing time. Oh my gosh, from Pushmo to Mighty Switch Force to VVVV and Muds, and was it? I think that was mainly it. I might have missed one in there.
Yeah, Zimpinball,
yes, and then Sekiro Samurai came, and then Dylan's Rolling Western kind of, you know, on the tail end of that was, yeah, it was a golden age of eShop.
Bomb Monkey, the release in Europe, will there be as long as a lag between the Mutant Muds, or like how it was for Mutant Muds, which I guess was almost 5 months, the delay between the North American and European release, will that be shorter for Bomb Monkey?
Yeah, that's the plan, definitely, is to make it a lot shorter. For us, you know, it was the first time we'd done that, so we kind of had a lot of stuff to learn, and the hope is to get it out in Europe much quicker than it came out in with Muds.
Awesome. So for the looking towards the future, I know ATV Wild Ride, that's set for an early fall release, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Should be hopefully in the third quarter. It might slide into the fourth, but hopefully in the third quarter of this year.
Now, I guess for those who aren't really familiar with it, I know ATV Wild Ride did come out on DS. It was published by Mastiff, right?
No,
okay,
Destineer.
Destineer. Mastiff did Moon, right?
Yes. That's right, yeah.
And that came out about a year and a half ago on DS. And then the 3DS version was, I guess you were originally shopping it around to be a 3DS retail title, and then it wound up being on the eShop. How did that all go down?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I mean, like going back to the DS one, you know, it really started off with, I loved playing Pure on the 360. I thought it was an amazing game. And I was like, man, having this kind of experience on the DS would be awesome. So I checked out, you know, what ATV games were on the DS, and to be frank, they were just awful. All of the ATV games on the DS were just like, wow, and almost embarrassingly bad. And it was like, but the technology was there. You could see that there was riders, there was an environment, everything was there, it could do it. But I think the decisions as far as implementation were just wrong in every way, and it was like, and it was really frustrating. So I wanted to play that, you know, on my DS, but I couldn't. Anyway, so that we had the driving portion of Moon we'd already developed, obviously the Moon Buggy and Moon. So we kind of took that and grew from that, and then created our own kind of ATV, you know, racing game for the DS, and I think it turned out great. I think, you know, we got some good reviews for it. It did well. It didn't have a great distribution, unfortunately, due to some difficulties that the publisher was having at the time. So it didn't really get out there. Even to this day, I've never seen it on the shelf anywhere.
Yeah, neither have I. I first heard about it when I met you at E3, two E3s ago, and I was like, wait, that's out? I had no idea.
Yeah, it's like, what? Yeah, exactly. I ordered my copy, you know, from Amazon, and I've never seen it, so it's like, whatever. You know, but I was really proud of it. I did really well, got some great scores, you know, like I said, different websites and stuff. People really seemed to like it. So, anyway, so we're like, well, we were working on Face Racers for the 3DS, which actually was an evolution of the ATV DS racing engine, funnily enough. So we thought, hey, let's go full circle and let's, you know, go back to ATV and kind of create that on the 3DS. Our first thought was just let's try and find a publisher to get out there. But it's just tough with any kind of original game. It was tough on the DS, with the DS version, to find a publisher to kind of get an original game out there. And it's the same with the 3DS. So we kind of shopped it around, had a playable demo and stuff. People liked it, it was just, well, I think people are just trying to play it safe now with different licenses and other kind of methods of trying to mitigate risk, as they say, as far as getting games on the shelf. So we're like, you know what, we really believe in it, we love it, let's just do it, you know, ourselves instead. So we've just been chipping away at it for, you know, the last few months, kind of on and off. And it's come together great. So we just decided, well, I mean, I think with how well I think Muds has done on the eShop and just the eShop itself, how good it is and how people seem to actually enjoy it. And I think there's a lot of activity on the eShop, certainly a lot more on DSiWare. And I think a lot of people want to go there than people went to DSiWare or WiiWare, just because the eShop is so much more easy and fun to kind of interact with.
Yeah, the DSiShop was kind of a joke.
Oh, my gosh. Oh my gosh, it was so frustrating.
There were a lot of good games hidden there, but man, was that a tough shop to navigate.
Ugh, it was so slow. It was just, wow. Gosh, I don't miss those days. Yeah, I remember going up there and downloading Cave Story, and it was just so painful. I was like, man, you know, I bought a lot of games, actually. Shantae, I bought Dark Void. I mean, I bought a lot of games on the DSiWare, and each time it was really painful, and it was almost telling me not to buy games. It was so painful to go on there. Anyway, so Muds did pretty well, and we're like, hey, you know, wouldn't it be cool to kind of release, you know, basically a retail quality game on the eShop, you know, for like something around $10? I think people would really appreciate that. So yeah, we just suddenly decided internally, let's just do it. And it's turned out great. Greg, our art director and co-founder of Renegade Kid, he's been focused on the artwork for basically, well, the entire game. I'm going to say basically, but no, literally the entire game. You know, so he upraised everything, all the textures, obviously a lot of the textures were already, we already created high-res versions for the DS game, but we had scaled them down, because that's just the way typically textures can be created, is that you create the big one and scale them down. So we had a lot of them already, which was great, and we've added really cool lighting and shadows. When you go into a shadow, your character darkens and stuff like that. It just looks great. We have MIT mapping, which helps kind of sparkly things in the distance, helps smooth that kind of stuff out. We're actually now working on two major added components to the game. The first one being suspension, which will be more of a subtle kind of thing that some people may not notice or care about. But for me, it's one of those things that I think will really kind of make it feel a little bit more like a console game rather than a handheld game in a way. And an obvious, hopefully, upgrade from the DS game. It's not completed yet, so hopefully we do complete it, and hopefully it does turn out as good as I imagine it to be. But it's come along really good, so we're going to get that in there. And then one big feature is online multiplayer and online an online ranking system, which... for me, I mean, when you go online and you play... especially a game that isn't Mario. You know, if you have a game, any game that is a third-party racing game or third-party multiplayer game, you know, it's hard to kind of build any kind of sense of community unless it's a first-party game, I think, unless it's a really massive license. So I was like, well, you know, just jumping online and playing against a bunch of random people that you don't know is a novelty, but you know, at first, but after a while, you're kind of like, why am I doing this? This is not that much fun. I don't know these people. There's no point, you know? You kind of lose the interest, and then you think, well, let's play some local player, multiplayer with people who have a copy of the game. So I think to try and add some kind of incentive, some kind of sense of community or something, is that we're creating an online ranking system where, really, you're going to go on there and you can be number one in the world. and it's going to be persistent, you know, forever. Well, as long as the system and everyone else, you know, lives and survives.
Awesome.
So it'll be up there. So I think it'll be nice. There'll be something to actually go after and a goal to achieve. And the good thing is it's obviously just like any ranking system. It's based on your performance and the points you earn and how well you race and, you know, stuff like that. So you may be number one today, but it doesn't mean you will be tomorrow. So you kind of always have to kind of keep a look at it to see how you're doing. And hopefully that sense of competition will create a little bit of extra kind of interest and kind of desire to actually play it. So I'm excited about that. So I think with this game, to completely contradict myself, as opposed to Bum Monkey, I think it's really worth it with this game.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was really worth, you know, like, you know, let's do multiplayer online because we had multiplayer local, the DS, and let's get ranking so there's an actual purpose to it. So I'm hoping that you know, really helps this game, because I'm really proud of it. It's really simple. It's not rocket science. It's not you know, some new thing, but it's just a fun racer with jumps and tricks, and it looks awesome. It has cool music. Actually, Greg's band did all the music, which is really cool. So it's kind of technically licensed music, which we license for free. But it sounds really good. It's really cool. If you like the style of music, it's very punk, rocky kind of stuff.
But
I love it. I think it fits it really well. So, yeah. So I'm really excited about ATV. And we've rebranded it as well. And if anyone's seen the box art of the first game, which most of you probably haven't, which is probably fortunate, it's very generic. That was kind of the purpose, was like, hey, let's get it in Walmart. Let's get it on the shelf. So it's that $20 kind of casual impulse buy. You know, even though it's a good game, let's, you know, get it out there so the casual players who are looking for something safe for their kiddos don't mind picking up. And that was kind of the strategy with that game. But the big vital piece of that strategy was it didn't get on the shelf. So that didn't work out too good. So this time we're like, you know what? It didn't feel good to do that, honestly, the first time around. So this time we're like, you know what? Forget that. Let's rebrand it the way we wanted to originally. With guys with backpacks, shirts, and cargo shorts on, not guys with official, you know, garb on. So we're going for more of the kind of fun surfer kind of, hey, I'm just on, I happen to be an ATV having fun kind of perspective. So if you go to ATVWildRide.com, you'll see there's a nice big splash image there that Greg created that looks freaking awesome. It completely embodies the original kind of intent of the game. So I'm super excited to be bringing it to the eShop. I think it's going to be... it's going to be awesome. I think it's going to be interesting to have a game of that value, that kind of quality, for like $9.99 or whatever it ends up being. I think it'd be really interesting to see how that does. I'm hoping it does well and people will kind of appreciate it and like it and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we already kind of saw that on the eShop with Order Up. just I guess last week. And then I guess Planet Crashers 3D, which is another game that you guys worked on, that was originally slated for retail, and it looks like that's coming to the eShop as well.
That's right.
And that's I take it you guys are done with that, and that's just in Ignition's hands now.
Exactly. Yeah. It's at Nintendo's approval process right now.
Awesome. Yeah. And then I guess after ATV Wild Ride 3D, what are your plans? Are you going to stick to just the 3DS eShop, or are you going to go elsewhere at all?
All of the above. We're definitely going to stick with the eShop because I, as a gamer, love it. And then from a business perspective, it seems to be doing all right. So that's two great reasons to stick with it. We're definitely going to be doing MUDS 2. Which I think we spoke about at E3. You posted an article about it.
You can read
NintendoReport.com
to read
That's
about
right.
what you told me at E3 about me.
That's
and
right. I have I've read what I told you at E3 about you. Yes. So yes, that's exciting. So that'll be coming out. Like I said, probably the first quarter of next year, but we may attempt to actually even try and get it out a little bit sooner than then, but we'll see how it goes. But yes, MUDS 2 for sure, because that's fun. And we have a few other ideas for beyond that as well. There's something after MUDS 2 completely different, and unrelated to anything else we've
done,
which is a really fun project kind of concept that our main... programmer Bob Ives, our technical director, who has been with us from the beginning and single-handedly created Dementium, one of his ideas. So it's his kind of his seed of an idea, which we're kind of growing from, which is really interesting. We haven't done anything like that before, so that's cool. It's a really cool idea. Anyway, so that's another thing that we're going to be working on as well. And then we are also porting Mutant MUDS over to the PC. Which is a little bit different for us, and that is super exciting. Not least of which of the reasons is because I have my Super Nintendo joypad plugged into my PC through a USB adapter. That certainly makes it sweeter. And that's actually working out really cool. We started working on this really cool... one of the issues was obviously it's 2D, obviously, on the PC. Unless you have a 3D monitor, which I don't know if many people do or not. but we certainly can't rely on that like we could on the 3DS. So to try and emulate that same kind of feeling, we started experimenting with an idea this week, which is the proof of concept has certainly worked out really well, and now we're actually finalizing it with more fancy techniques, is the depth of field kind of effect. So you start off, you know, in the middle layer, and the foreground layer and the background layer will be slightly blurry. And then when you jump into the background will become crystal clear, the foreground will become even more blurry, and then the mid-ground that you were on will become slightly blurry, and it looks freaking awesome. So it looks like the camera is kind of changing focus as you're moving across the playfields. It looks ridiculous. It looks so cool.
It kind of reminds me especially of Shantae Risky's Revenge. It was a game that did that kind of jumping into the background and the foreground, and that seems to kind of be reminiscent of how they did that, where it's like they just... focused in a little more on the layer that was active.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it just looks so good, especially when you're in the extreme. If you're in the extreme back or extreme front, it's just amazing just to see just how blurry the other playfield is. It looks really good. I mean, it really does trick your mind to thinking there's depth because of the blurry kind of foreground. Your mind turns it off. It just doesn't pay attention to it because it emulates reality, you know, and you're focusing on something at a distance. It's really fascinating, really interesting. It's great. It's like, wow, it looks really good. So anyway, so that's cool. So we're going to have the PC version. Actually, the whole game is playable. It's all there. I can play through the whole thing. We're just wrapping it up now as far as those kinds of effects and, you know, stuff like that. I mean, just the kind of PC-ness of it, just to kind of, you know, the options to make it full screen and not full screen and that kind of stuff, just those kinds of things. But it works great. Awesome. So we should have that wrapped up in the next few weeks and have that coming out on various probably different distribution platforms, I expect. So yes, very excited about that.
And I guess to wrap this discussion up, how do you feel about some of the news that came out of the Nintendo Direct last week, such as the 3DS XL the DLC that Nintendo's doing for New Super Mario Bros. 2 and other assorted things.
Yeah, I thought that was really smart of them. I think, I mean, to have that event basically after E3 was amazing. You know, I think obviously E3 ended with some people disappointed with Nintendo. Yeah, I think that really just highlight, you know, just put the spotlight right back on them again in a good way, which is really very smart of them to do that. Because obviously they could have shown that and announced that at E3 and people would have liked it and so on. But I think putting its own spotlight on it after the fact was very smart. And it allowed E3 to be all about Wii U, and then after that, all about 3DS. And I thought that was very clever of them to do that. I think the XL looks incredible. God, I mean, it looks like they've really refined the hardware. You know, the physical design.
It looks beautiful. Of the device. When I first saw it in the video, I thought it looked very weird. But then, I think there was a European outlet that posted like video of it and pictures, and it looks so gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah, I was looking at pictures of people just holding it, and it looks a lot nicer. Yeah,
it also looks giant, but I'm fine with
it. It does look huge. It looks great. I mean, I like that it has the three separate buttons for the, select, home, and start down there. So that would be nice. It has that kind of matte finish of like a DSi kind of feeling, you know? It looks like it does anyway.
It does.
It looks very smooth, and the corners are even more rounded than the 3DS. It looks really nice. It looks cool, but honestly, I like small handhelds. So I kind of wish that they would do a light version with that same kind of finish, you know? I'm tempted to buy the XL because it just looks so beautiful, but honestly, I don't know if I want a machine that big. I kind of like smaller handhelds, so... I'll get it in my hands at some point, I guess, and check it out, but... But yeah, it looks great though. Yeah. It's. I guess maybe that suggests that the DSi XL was very successful for them. You know, that they went that route rather than the lights.
Yeah, I mean, well, if you look at kind of the comparisons to when they've done like I guess a drastically smaller system and a much bigger one, you know, the Game Boy Advance Micro, from what I remember and what I heard, that kind of crashed and burned. Although I think that little system's gorgeous.
It is. It's amazing.
I didn't get that right when it came out, but I got it a couple years later, and that's, if I go back to play a Game Boy Advance game, that is what I play. It is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was a big fan of the GBA SP.
Yeah.
I just freaking love that thing. Oh my gosh.
My only issue with that is I'd always kind of like cramp my hands on it just because of how like angular it was.
True. It is tiny. Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. It's such an... I mean, I got the dark graphite, what is it called? I have it up there on the shelf. I'm trying to see if there's a name on it. I don't know. It's the dark kind of gray graphite, awesome looking thing with the brighter screen. It looks, love that thing.
But and then I think the DSi XL originally it was kind of billed as like the large print version of the DSi, but I think it did sell a lot better than they expected. And I think they actually I think one of the press releases about the 3DS XL, they kind of hinted at the fact that the DSi XL sold drastically more units than the DSi.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's... I mean, it was a very clever campaign when the DSi XL came out, because it was hand-in-hand with Brain Age in that whole thing, you know? And Professor Layton, that whole kind of period all happened around the same time. So, you know, you got an older demographic, basically, going, great, you know, I'll have a bigger machine, I'm not, you know, I don't have to squint at it kind of thing. I have these games that are totally for my brain that I want to play. They're not kind of silly games where I get to shoot things or do whatever. So it was a really good campaign at that time. So in theory, I assume they're probably going to back it up with similar software. But if they don't, then I think they might find that it's, you know, bad timing.
Yeah.
Because that was kind of hand in hand with it, really. I mean, it wasn't just about the hardware. It was about the audience had something to play. And they had the machine to play it on. And obviously, they have to go together. You don't need one without the other. So it'll be interesting to see how they approach that. Because I always assume these things with Nintendo, because they are brilliant and they're smart and I love them. But they do make these weird mistakes sometimes. Like, it would be odd if they brought the XL out, but suddenly didn't bring Brain Age or Professor Layton out.
Well, I mean, Layton 5 is coming out in November. I guess that new Brain Age game's got to be coming out sometime in North America and Europe. It's coming out on the same day as the 3DS XL in Japan.
Well, there you go.
I don't know if you've heard anything about it. I think it's called Onetore in Japan. It's demon training, where there's an evil version of Dr. Kawashima.
Oh, yes. Okay,
it's,
yes,
it's all
I've
this
seen
math
that.
And memory
okay.
stuff.
Oh, that's what that is. Because I remember seeing the box and see the little devil guy in the front. I'm like, what is that? Okay, I didn't realize what that was. Now I know. Cool. Yeah. But what else was it mentioned? I thought the DLC stuff was very cool for you know, the Gold Rush levels of Mario 2. That's going to be interesting to see how that goes. I like the fact that, you know, they're not even going to start making them until the game's out.
I like
that
too.
Kind of be almost be this live team, you know, kind of creating stuff for people. I like the concept of that. Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how that goes and how they approach that. Because that will certainly path the way for, or pave the way, I should say, for how other people will probably copy them, you know, and probably me included. You know, I think that will be really interesting to see how they handle that and just how much they cost and how often they do it and just how it's presented to the user. And if you buy them one at a time or you buy them in packages or, you know, just all that stuff. There's so many ways you could do that that they can afford to be experimental with that maybe people like us can't as much. So, yeah, it'd be cool to see what they do with that.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to see how that all works out. And I do kind of like the way that they're doing this DLC, not with the intent of having day one DLC, but just to have more content in the coming months. And it's brilliant to do that for new Super Mario Brothers.
It is. I mean, what a great reason to get on the eShop. I mean, it's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, you know, products for them, you know, brands for them or whatever. And basically forcing people to go on the eShop to then get more content for it. It's like, wow, that's going to bring a lot of traffic to the eShop. You know, that's it's interesting. You know, will you do it through the game? You know, will the game take you to the eShop? Or will you have to go to the eShop separately? That's going to be really interesting to see how they connect the two. Because the game doesn't technically live on your console like most eShop games, unless, of course, you download it. But if you don't, it's going to be interesting to see how they connect the two. Because some users don't even realize it has an eShop. You know, they'll just buy games for it, shove it in there, and there you go. So it'll be interesting to see how they bridge that gap. And it could be the thing that does bridge that gap, because there is that problem right now of some people not realizing that you can get online with a 3DS and there's a whole, you know, library of games on there. So it'd be interesting to see if this is one of the titles that helps, you know, fix that
issue.
Like,
I'm pretty sure Theater Rhythm, which comes out in North America 1 week from today, I believe that has an in-game DLC shop. And
because
I think
that'll
be basically the first game to hit North America that has DLC.
Sweet. Yeah, that's cool.
Good to see how that all works.
Yeah, no, I've heard lots of... I wish I got to see that game at E3, but I've heard amazing things about that game. Everyone seems to love it.
I didn't actually get to play it at E3 either, and I'm looking... I have my Amazon pre-order, release day delivery.
Right. So when does it come out? Let's say 2 weeks?
July 3rd.
A week after? Oh, wow. Okay, yeah.
And then it's a full month of games. It should be a good time.
I know, right? Yeah.
That's pretty much that and Rhythm Thief. That's basically what July is.
Yeah, yeah.
But, Jules, thank you very much for coming on. Is there any last thoughts you want to tell the myriad of listeners that I pretend that we have?
Well, how about I turn it back on you and ask you what your thoughts were of Bomb Monkey? Oh, snap. I
my review should be going up maybe tomorrow.
Okay,
and
cool.
I really enjoy it. I've been playing it a lot. The one thing that keeps on kind of coming back to me is that, I mean, well, the two-player mode is brilliant. It's wonderful. It kind of sucks that there's no kind of online leaderboard, because, I mean, I'm competing with myself, but there's only so far that can go. Because it's kind of like it's like a self-fulfilling carrot on the stick. And then the other single-player modes, which I think they're kind of cool, but it just seems like it's like, you know, I played the rescue mode once or twice, and I'm like, oh, that was fun. Let's go back to Endless.
Yeah.
They serve as more of a distraction and not really like a viable alternative to playing the Endless mode.
Right, totally. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, one thing actually worth thinking of, kind of going old school with the leaderboard, is just getting people to go and send photos
of
their high score. Could be quite
funny. And there's also, I mean, a pretty easy way to do that. It's not like, you know, a speed run in Shantae where you need to take the picture right after you finish it. Your high score is always displayed on
there.
The screen.
Yeah, no, totally. And everyone has a camera on their phone these days, so it's not like it's difficult to do that, but... Yeah, and what's interesting is, I mean, depending on obviously how well it's received, you know, it'll be $4.99 when it comes out, which obviously is, you know, pretty decent price, you know, for a game on there. So I mean, just, if it does well, the good thing is there's always the possibility to go back and patch games, yep. You know. So it could be one of those things we could add if there is something awesome. That feels worth doing, which is always nice. Yeah, we'll have to yeah. see.
I mean, other than that, I cool. really enjoyed it. And I'm not just saying that because you're here. It's a really fun puzzle game that I keep on going back cool, to. Man. It's become, I guess, not necessarily that I'm playing it while I'm in the bathroom, but it's that kind of game where it's just like I'm hanging out watching TV. I'll play Bomb Monkey for a little bit. It's kind of it's a good puzzle game. It has replaced Dr. Mario in my 3DS/DSi rotation.
Wow, that's high praise, I would think. But no, it's a fun time waster, you know? And that's the thing for us, it's just that's what it is. Yeah, it's just a nice, simple little game. So, well, cool, I look forward to reading your review, checking out what you think of it.
Thank you very much for coming on, and hopefully we'll talk to you sometime later about Planet Crashers and or ATV Wild Ride.
Yes, I'd love to. That'd be awesome, man.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode, and I hope you enjoyed it. Please rate and review us on iTunes, and if you have any listener mail, you can send it to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this segment of Connectivity, a bonus segment at that. I'm Scott Thompson, and today I'm joined by Nate Andrews.
Hello.
And James Dawson.
Hey.
And we're going to be talking about Diablo 3, the sort of love it or hate it sequel to Diablo 1 and 2, released, maybe about a month ago now, by Blizzard. So, starting things off, I was a little curious about both of your guys' experience with the Diablo series. Like, have you guys played 1 and 2 before? Did you just get in on the ground floor with 3? How did that work?
Go ahead.
I played Diablo 2 about a month before the game came out.
For the first time?
Yeah, so I don't have a lot of experience, and I only played it for a little bit just to see how it felt. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed it, but I felt that it was a little overly complicated.
Yeah, I could say. Well, especially compared to 3.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, we'll get into. But yeah, it's definitely a lot more complex. And a lot more to, like, the potion management. I mean, that's a big part of the game right there. It's just, like, spamming potions and all that good stuff. So you've never even played 1, then?
No, I haven't.
Okay. And then, Nate, what about you?
So my experience is a lot like James. I picked up 2 online when... probably around the time that the Diablo 3 beta came out, just to try it out. And I think I have kind of the same feelings.
Yeah.
It's definitely interesting, and I see why people, especially when it came out, got into that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you have to remember, I mean, I guess it's almost been, what, 12 years now? I think 2000s when the Diablo 2 came out.
Yeah.
That's crazy. As for me, I've played all 3 games as they were current. I on my old like Pentium 2 computer, I played the original Diablo, and then later Diablo 2, and then now Diablo 3. So
I bought the first Diablo, and going back to that, especially after 2 and 3,
it's
an amazingly slow game.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's no run or anything. I mean, your character just kind of plods along.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, it's a very, very slow game. This is definitely true. And actually, come to think of it, in Diablo 2, if we're talking about speed real quick, there was actually running, but it used stamina.
Yeah,
right?
There's
it
a
could
button
actually run out.
Yeah.
Wow. That's kind of crazy. All right, so I guess each of you then just kind of were getting swept up in the Diablo 3 hype, and I guess got in right in with that one.
I do kind of feel like having played Diablo 3 for, like, I don't know, dozens and dozens of hours now, that my experience with that is kind of, I guess, what somebody would have playing Diablo 2 when that came out, if that makes sense.
What do you mean? Like, just, like, in terms of your enjoyment of it?
Yeah, and just getting, like, completely sucked into that kind of game.
Yeah.
I actually went out and bought the Book of Cain before the game came out so I could know the story.
Oh, wow.
And honestly, I really like the game's lore. I think Diablo 3 had a pretty decent story as well.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I mean, the biggest thing, and we can move into this because I wanted to talk about, I guess, our first impressions of Diablo 3, whether you played the beta, which I didn't, but I think both of you did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then also just kind of our first day experiences with the game. But that first day of getting and actually being able to get online when the servers weren't just, like, shitting themselves, there was this sort of, like, frenzy, and every time I logged on, I would just, like, sort of join someone's game at random. And so the first act for me, until I played through all the way to, played it again on Nightmare difficulty, was sort of just, like, bits and pieces, because I kept jumping in, and it would just automatically, like, take you, you know, like,
right,
catch you up.
That's weird, because when I did it, I played most of the normal difficulty solo.
Yeah.
It wasn't until, like, Nightmare that I started playing with you and, like, other groups of people.
Right.
Yeah, I actually only have experience with solo and normal difficulty. Because after,
oh, really?
Yeah, after,
oh, wow,
I beat Diablo, I just stopped playing it.
Wow, okay, you didn't get caught, like, in the whole... I mean, like, the biggest thing, I think, is, like, for that game, it's sort of that the way it ensnares you and, like, forces you through, like, each difficulty. Like, it really, like, kind of gets, like, its tendrils in you and kind of, like,
yeah,
gets,
like,
really addicting.
I think you and I were playing, and we beat normal,
oh, yeah,
and then we just immediately started on Nightmare.
We did,
played,
yeah.
For hours after that.
Right, probably played, like, half of Act 1 on Nightmare right there. Wow, that's interesting. Well, I know James, actually, one night, I remember you, I'll never forget it, the day you really hurt my feelings when I joined your game and you told me, oh no, I think for my first playthrough, I want to play by myself so I really get the whole story.
Yeah.
And then you left the game. But that's okay. I understand. And, like, now that I've played through it again, like, being able to witness the whole story. I mean, I don't think it's, like, amazing by any means, but there's enough there that it's interesting. And
it's very campy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as most Blizzard games are,
right,
it's all just, like, tropes, you know, whether it's, like, sci-fi or high fantasy or, you know, anything like that.
I actually think the game's lore is probably done a bit better than the actual story.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, it's actually pretty in-depth, especially on... the Book of Cain's not very long, but it actually makes a pretty interesting world.
Really?
Yeah.
So, I actually don't... What is in the Book of Cain? Is it just, like, sort of a wiki of Diablo lore?
Yeah, it's written from Cain's perspective, kind of like a journal.
Oh, okay.
And it's basically... It talks about the beginning of the world and talks about all the, I think, the prime evils and the lesser evils. It goes into the battle with the angels and things. It's actually really interesting.
That's pretty cool.
I think it's actually written to Leia.
Oh.
Oh. That's pretty awesome. Now, as far as, like, well, I'm guessing not. Now, but I guess, like, the you know, you'll find his book scattered throughout the game, and he'll, like, read you little things. Or, you know, he'll even tell you about monsters when you encounter new monsters. Is it written in that same kind of style? Or?
Yeah, kind of like that.
Okay.
Is there is there an audiobook of Cain so I can just listen to him
reading
say everything? Horribly voice.
I don't think there is. It's kind of an art book, too.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be awesome.
I would buy that.
So, those first few days, though, I don't know about you guys, but like I said, there was definitely a frenzy, and it was definitely, like, any spare time I had, I wanted to be playing the game. I don't know if you guys felt that way, too, in the first few days.
Yeah, I had the same.
I definitely snuck in some games at work.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, too, it helped kind of fuel that was the fact that the servers were sort of inconsistent. Those first few days, you never really knew if you were going to get to play. So it's like, if you got to log on and you actually got to play, it was like, you kind of savored it. I mean, there was a few times I'd log in and then like a timer would be starting and say, well, the servers are going to shut down like in, you know, five minutes.
Half an hour or something.
Right. And it was just the worst. Oh, man. What did you guys think about the fact that you had to be online to play, you know, even single player? Especially you, James, playing it entirely single player. Yeah, did that ever bother you?
Not really. Actually, I was kind of happy about that because I don't... Mods and hacking and things always bothered me in games quite a bit. Because I like to keep it kind of the most possible, as pure as possible. Like, I won't use mods in games because it kind of... if it's not what the developers intended to be in the game, even if they intended the game to be moddable, I won't play it.
Sure.
So I'm really happy they kept it that way because I don't want hacked items, even though I haven't been playing it lately. I know a lot of people don't like it.
Mm-hmm. So, don't like the logging in, right? Yeah.
It was really bothersome at the beginning, though.
Right, because, just because of the server load. Now, obviously, you can log in, no problem.
Yeah, I definitely don't mind it as much now. I kind of appreciate the convenience of being able to do it anywhere, you know, pick up from any spot.
Right, like any computer, sure. And, like, it's nice, like, even though you're playing single player, it's kind of cool, like, to see what other people are doing. And if, like, your friend comes on, like, you know right away.
You can jump into his game immediately. You can jump, you know, to any point.
Right, which is awesome. So, like, once you get into it, once the servers calm down, like, it really became streamlined and kind of cool.
For the most part. I still get some pretty bad lag from time.
Which is always disorienting when it's just you. It's like, why is this happening?
And it totally ruins it.
Right, and this is the kind of game where a little bit of lag, even for a few seconds, can just completely kill you. Because you need to heal and you don't know, and then you're dead.
Yeah, I saw a video of somebody playing on hardcore, and it laid down on him for a while, and it came back, and he was just dead.
Oh my god.
His character's gone forever.
That would be awful.
Yeah.
Wow. Let's see here. So... James, why don't you feel the need to go back to it? I mean, are you done? Like, do you think you'll ever play through it again, or you just feel like you've completed it and that's it?
I'll probably go back. It's just that I played it day in, day out, just constantly when it first came out.
Yeah.
And I guess I kind of got burnt out on it.
Sure.
And I had other games. I think I was playing Animal Crossing at the time, too, and some other things. So I'll probably go back to it, especially I'm going to be transferring to a new college and I'll be living in the dorm, so I'm sure I'll have people to play with.
Oh, yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah, I'll probably go back to it.
And then, Nate, how far have you gotten so far? So, like, how much have you played?
I'm at, like, 50-some hours with my monk, which is...
Okay.
I've started a wizard. I haven't played much of that. It's mostly the monk. I'm trying to level that up. But, yeah, that's the only character I've done, so I'm probably going to go through a couple more times.
Yeah. Yeah, same here. I made my barbarian to start out with, and I think now I'm, like, almost at Act 2 on Hell difficulty.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, but see, I started going through, because Nate, you and I played almost through Nightmare, like, entirely together.
Yeah.
But then getting to Hell, like, I was, like, kind of playing it by myself, and it got
that's no good.
Friggin' hard. It got so hard. So it's kind of burnt me out on it. And, in fact, I've kind of got in this weird mood where I've gone back and started playing a lot of StarCraft 2, which is weird. Yeah, just, like, competitively. I don't know why. Every few months that kind of happens, but I guess it's just the Blizzard connection that kind of made me want to go back to it. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'd like to keep playing through with my Barbarian, but at this point, like, I think because there's been so much time now, it's, like, I kind of lost that, like, I don't know, that, like, impulse to want to keep going and find that better gear, you know, and, like, just to keep pushing. So I did...
Yeah, I think if I took a break like that, I would have to come back with a fresh character.
Right.
Kind of, you know, get the other side of the experience.
Right. And I did start a wizard, and I played through to probably, like, about level 12. I guess it speaks to that initial, like, hook the game gets in you. But my little brother bought the game maybe, like, 2 weeks after it launched, maybe 3 weeks. So I was already, like, you know, halfway through Nightmare difficulty. So I was like, okay, I'll start a new character, and that way we can play together.
Right.
And then he kind of has a part-time job, but he doesn't work that much. So, it within a week, he was already, like, at level, like, 40-something. And I was already just playing with him with my main barbarian. Like, it was just crazy. He just blew through the game. And with several characters, nonetheless. He started a Demon Hunter and then played about 20 levels of that and then switched it up to Monk, actually, and then played all the way to where he's at now with that. And now he's, like, level, like, 57. He's almost, like, through hell difficulty, so pretty wild.
That's pretty wild.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've played a bunch, but that's nothing.
Right, exactly.
Have any of you given the auction house a go yet?
Yes.
I was just going to ask you guys about that.
I've sold a couple things on the auction house. I think like $7 worth of.
Oh, wow. You even sold like the real money stuff. Okay.
Yeah, I got lucky a couple times.
Yeah.
Nice. Now, how does that, as far as that, is that taxed at all? How does that go?
I don't know about tax. There's a certain
service fee.
Service fee
goes to Blizzard.
That, yeah.
Yeah.
That's and I pretty think, interesting. I think if you move that over to PayPal, there might be some stuff associated with that.
Yeah, I think they take a certain amount from PayPal when you put it on.
Yeah, yeah. Mine's just in my Battle.net account right now.
Okay. So. You think you'll move it over? Do you think you'll just spend it on something?
Yeah, you know, once I get up to a couple hundred dollars, I'll probably shift it. But
you think it'll get up that high?
No, probably not.
That's wild.
I'll probably spend it on something trivial.
Right. I mean, it's just sitting there, and if they're going to keep cutting chunks out of it, the more you move it, and like, yeah, I guess you might as well just spend it. It's kind of interesting, that whole philosophy. I mean, to just let you, the user, sell things in the game for actual money is kind of wild to me. And obviously, I think they were a little nervous about it. They waited a while to launch it. Yeah. I think they wanted to wait till maybe, like, there weren't as many people just up and buying the game right when it came out. Maybe they're worried about it getting flooded and too many people, like, exploiting it. And now, like, kind of tied to that, have you guys heard about this, like, whole, like, trial period thing?
Yeah, they just rolled that back, though, if I'm not mistaken.
Is that completely gone, or did they...
I think so.
Oh, okay.
I saw something about that today.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't see that. I saw the initial story, which, for anyone who doesn't know, Blizzard was going to institute, like, basically a trial period. So you buy the game, I mean, you've paid your money for the game, and yet you, for 72 hours, you can only play up to a certain point and, like, get your character up to a certain level. And then you just have to wait. And I guess this is to make sure you're a real person. You're not just going to try to somehow like exploit the auction house.
Huh.
So I don't really understand like just buying the game how you'd be able to really like influence the you know the real monetary auction house in any way outside of just buying things. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to find anything that anyone's going to want to buy in those first 3 days. So I thought that was kind of wild, but
yeah, I'm pretty sure that's gone now. At least the trial period.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's definitely good then.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I haven't messed with either auction house, the real one or the you know, the in-game currency one. I think if you could do it through the game, like when you're actually playing the game, I might be inclined to do it, but I think the fact that you have to like exit out and go to a menu and stuff.
Yeah. The checkpoints aren't that great either.
What do you mean?
In the game. At least I found. Like if you're going through a dungeon or something, you have to advance to a certain point.
Oh, yeah. So you can start right from there, yeah. Yeah. And then that sucks
if you portal back to town and then you try to go back, then...
Right. And then that's kind of a bummer because then it clears out your whole map and you have to restart, you know, like it's a whole new generated world.
Yeah,
yeah, for somebody like me who always tries to, like, fill out the map.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you play that way too, James?
Yeah, I do the exact same thing.
Okay, yeah, same here. I love that you guys do that, because I feel like that's such an
old school...
Like, the first time we played together,
I'm like, oh god, thank goodness that we're both, like, exploring this entire thing.
Totally. It drives me crazy when I play with people who don't, because I'm just like, oh, there might be a chest there, you just don't know.
There's a stump over there.
Yeah, that stump could be anything.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I had to play the first part time alone.
Because people were just probably rushing through it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of
and on the higher difficulties, it's you know less of an issue because you're trying to grind through the higher level enemies and not you know searching for gold and stuff like that. It's mostly like a rush to the boss and stuff like that.
Yeah,
in the later, yeah, exactly. Yeah. That does drive me crazy. But I love that both of you do that because I was gonna say that's like such an old school Diablo like method of playing. Like that just reminds me of the first game so much.
I do that with every game actually.
Really, like, have to explore everything before you move to a new area?
That's probably why I have, like, 200 hours on Pokemon before I went to the Elite Four.
Holy crap.
So.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
Jeez. So, yeah, I think we're kind of wrapping up here. We've kind of covered everything I wanted to cover. Was there anything you guys wanted to mention specifically?
Not really.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I know they rolled out a couple patches. I don't know if you guys have experienced anything with the character or anything that's felt different.
Not really. I know they, like, nerfed some things, but yeah. I think that didn't really apply to, like, the Barbarian very much. And then I know they were supposed to, like, lower the difficulty of Inferno mode. So that it was a little easier to get through, but I haven't gotten that far yet, so that also hasn't really applied to me. I don't know, it's interesting. I mean, it's had such, like, a shaky kind of first few months. I mean, for as good of a game as it is, like, it's kind of been met with a lot of controversy. You know, whether it's the initial first days where people couldn't get in and everyone's mad because they just want to play alone, but they still have to be online. And then now, which it sounds like they've fixed it, but, you know, this whole trial period that they had first talked about and, you know, just things like that. It's kind of interesting. It seems like they were really ambitious with this game, and in some ways maybe they weren't expecting the sort of negative feedback that they got. Especially Blizzard. I feel like Blizzard's usually, like, untouchable. It's this company that does, like, everything perfectly and that is, like, revered. I mean, sort of in the way that Valve is.
Yeah.
I don't know. They kind of had some missteps with this.
And they still have yet to roll out the PvP part of it.
Hmm.
That's true. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. I don't know when that's going to come. But, for both of you, having not really played 1 or 2, and now that you've ostensibly finished the game, you know, quote-unquote, I guess you never really finish it, but, I mean, is it what you expected it would be? I mean, James, you stopped early, so I don't know if, like, it didn't grab you the way maybe you thought it would. Because at first, with the way you, I mean, you played the beta, and you even first proposed, like, having a Diablo 3, like, segment. Yeah. I thought you were, like, a Diablo super fan. I just assumed you played all the games, and, like, you were just, like, frothing at the mouth for this. But,
I think it was mostly because I'm a really big fan of The Binding of Isaac. And I like that type of, like, just dungeon crawler where you're just going through dungeons.
Sure.
And I mean it did. It was pretty much what I expected. It was just that I think I just got burnt out too quickly. I do plan on going back because I did really enjoy it, and I think I've only actually played as a demon hunter, so I want to try out all the classes eventually.
Okay. Yeah. And then what about you, Nate? Like, is it been as good as you thought it would be? Or
yeah, I think so. It was kind of a novel thing when I first started. You know. The whole Diablo experience, but it has kind of blossomed into, you know, the stories that people tell of playing all night and
right,
you know, getting that item, having to try it out.
Right. I mean, we definitely
cycle of
of killing and going back to town and just identifying an item and, like, praying it's what you want, like, just that piece you need to, like, get to that next, like, echelon, I guess.
Yeah.
And I know we've definitely had a lot of late nights playing. I mean, I can't think of how many, like, 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. nights we had, like, just trying to get through an entire act in one night and stuff like that. So, I've been pleasantly surprised. It seems like a game, too, that you can easily go back to. I guess much in the same way that I'll go back to StarCraft 2, like, every few months and just play competitively for a few weeks, and then I kind of stop. You know, it just seems like, you know, it's easy to roll a new character. And, you know, if you get someone who hasn't played it before and, you know, you get in there with someone playing it for the first time, I mean, it's just, like, I don't know, it's, like, brand new again, you know? And
yeah,
there's
a really low barrier of entry.
Right, and a lot of replayability. I think we should make a pact to try to start hardcore characters and see how far we can get.
I'd be up for that.
Yeah.
Great. If anyone out there plays, I think, you can do 5 players in a game, right? Or is it 4?
It's
5?
4.
4?
Is it just 4?
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then we could use one more. So if anyone out there listening to Connectivity plays Diablo 3, maybe you can be our fourth hardcore party member. Yeah, Andy's good. We'll not drag the party down. I watched this, like, video of these two guys before Inferno got, like, nerfed, if you will, playing through on hardcore and beating Diablo. You guys happen to see that?
Yeah,
I don't know which one you're talking about.
Okay, it was pretty intense. I mean, they were, like, they had, you know, their headsets on, and they were, like, super, like, strategic about it. And, like, yeah, it was really, really intense. And, I mean, I understand it, because you got it once, and that's it. Yeah, exactly. Click, click, click.
Was this the first guy that, the first two guys that beat Diablo on Inferno?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, yeah.
And, like, their whole thing was the patch was coming, like, in the next day. So they played through all of Act 4 in one sitting, like, in one day on Inferno difficulty.
Have you seen the guy who, I guess, he's sort of some sort of Diablo celebrity who just going for, like, a super high DPS so he can take down the bosses in, like, half a second?
No.
Something like that? Yeah, there's videos out there. He's trying to, like, do speed runs on each of the bosses.
Weird.
To get it down to, like, tenths of a second.
Wow, he's just going for like all damage output just to like...
Yeah, it's, it's everything or nothing.
Like, what's he play as?
I don't remember.
Huh. I'd be interested to know what class. Demon Hunter? Yeah. Yeah, I think it'd be one of those mixed classes. Like, I don't think you could do that with like an all magic class or like an like the barbarian. Because, yeah. Huh. That's interesting. All right. Well, I think that will do it. So that's Diablo 3. You know, a really good game, I think so. A lot of controversy, but in the end, I think we'll just remember it for being a good game. I think both of you should go back and try to beat Diablo 2.
Yeah, I might do that.
Yeah, I probably will at some point.
It's so archaic now compared to 3.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't really talk too much about the improvements and the way they've streamlined the system, but, you know, they definitely did.
Oh, yeah.
for the better, I think. So, all right, well, thanks, James and Nate for joining me.
Thanks.
And we'll see you guys later.
See ya.
Bye.